This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello again, I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up now on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 24th. And we'll continue looking for your response to the State of the Union address last night and the Democratic response and your questions for our guests this hour. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. We have with us first a writer for The Nation magazine for the first half hour. And then after 7:30, we'll be welcoming in a former syndicated columnist John Leo to give us his perspective on what was said. President Bush delivered his sixth State of the Union address last night, and he used the opportunity to ask Congress to give his Iraq policy a chance to work.
I've spoken with many of you in person. I respect you and the arguments you've made. We went into this largely united in our assumptions and in our convictions. And whatever you voted for, you did not vote for failure. Our country is pursuing a new strategy in Iraq, and I ask you to give it a chance to work. And I ask you to support our troops in the field and those on their way.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. On domestic issues, the president called on Congress to reform immigration policy, and he pitched proposals that he says will improve the health care system, and he wants to reduce gasoline use by 20% within the next decade. We'll touch on any of the major foreign and domestic issues addressed in the State of the Union address with you and with our guest. We start with Ari Berman, contributing writer for The Nation and a Puffin Foundation writing fellow at The Nation Institute. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. So give President Bush's plan in Iraq a chance to work?
Well, I think it's a little bit too late for that. It was funny when Bush said, whatever you voted for, you didn't vote for failure. I think you could flip that and say, whatever the American people voted for this November, they didn't vote for escalation. Mm-hmm. So I think most people in Congress are scratching their heads right now, Democrat and Republican, and there's a pretty vigorous debate going on just how to oppose Bush's plan, not whether to oppose it, but how to oppose it. And so this morning, for example, leading senators are going to go over in the wording of a resolution that denounces the president's proposal. They're not going to go in and say, gee, maybe we should support this thing. Mm-hmm. They're going to go in and say, okay, what's the right language to use to say we don't support this? Yeah.
No minds were changed with what the president said last night.
No, I mean, it was probably one of the most irrelevant State of the Union speeches in recent memory.
Yeah. There's going to be this resolution to put congresspeople on record as to opposing or supporting the escalation of the troops in Iraq. What do you predict is going to happen?
Well, I mean, the Senate will oppose Bush's plan. Right now, it's just a question of numbers. And then it's a question of what they'll do after. I mean, the Democratic leadership has set a strategy whereby they will try to get support for this resolution, as many Republicans as possible, and then use that to say, once it passes, listen, Mr. President, the Senate doesn't support you, the Congress doesn't support you, you need to pull back. And then if they don't pull back, they can say, well, listen, he's not listening to us. It's time for more decisive action that will involve probably the money, because the only way that President Bush will listen to Congress is if they take away the money that he needs to fund the war.
Yeah. So you don't think that this voting on this resolution is symbolic and useless?
I think it is probably mostly symbolic and useless. I mean, I'm telling you what the Democratic leadership mm-hmm. is arguing. I mean, I don't think President Bush cares what Congress thinks. I don't think he cared what Republicans in Congress thought when they were in the majority, and I don't think he cares what Democrats thought now that they're in the majority. He's a very insulated president, as we've read and we know. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, a resolution from Congress, could it change some president's mind? Maybe. Will it change this president's mind? Pretty unlikely at this point. I mean, he's implementing a policy that a very large majority of Americans already disapprove of.
Yeah. What did you think of Senator Webb's Democratic response last night?
I thought it was strong. Mm-hmm. Usually these Democratic responses or any responses are very boring, you know, pretty much useless responses. Webb is tough, though, and he's sharp, and he's an unconventional character to choose. I mean, he was nowhere near a spokesman for his for the party. He wasn't even a Democrat until pretty recently. He ran a very unconventional campaign, but I think I would argue that his upset of George Allen in Virginia during the campaign, and then his exchange with President Bush at the White House, where Bush asked Webb, you know, how's your boy? Because Webb's son is a Marine serving in Iraq, recently deployed. And Webb said, you know, I'd like to bring them home, Mr. President. And the president said to Webb, that's not what I asked. How's your boy? And Webb said, that's between me and my boy. And I think that exchange in some ways really set the tone for the new Congress, that they were not going to let Bush sort of do whatever he wanted, and they were going to stand up to him, even if that meant, you know, not making pleasantries with him at the White House, which is a time-honored tradition. So Webb's a different kind of politician, and by choosing them, they basically said, we want someone who's blunt and honest and will sort of speak, you know, from his heart. And Webb wrote this speech. I mean, the Democratic leadership didn't write it and say, okay, you sign off on this.
Yeah, I heard that it was written by some Democratic group, and he just rewrote it.
Yeah, he wrote all his speeches during the campaign by hand. Mm-hmm. He was not a kind of guy. You know, I said on a blog I wrote last night, he's more likely to scowl than smile. I mean, he is not a typical guy to give this kind of response. I was somewhat shocked. I mean, he doesn't like a lot of the pleasantries of Washington. He doesn't fit in. You know, he's a former Republican Secretary of the Navy who's written a ton of books about Vietnam, wore combat boots during the campaign, you know. And he's really an old-school sort of Southern populist in certain ways who happens to have a lot of experience on national security. So I think they really want him to hammer these two major themes, which is the economic equality that's going on in America and the toll the Iraq war has taken on the country.
Yeah, we're talking about the State of the Union, according to President Bush last night, and also according to the Democratic response by Jim Webb. And we welcome your response, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. What did you think? Anything that you heard that you liked or didn't like? We welcome your calls for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 18 and a half minutes past 7 o'clock right now. We're talking with Ari Berman, contributing writer for The Nation and a Puffin Foundation writing fellow at The Nation Institute. He's giving us his take on the State of the Union address last night and the Democratic response. And we welcome your thoughts and your questions as well. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Linda in Monroe is with us now. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mr. Berman.
Good morning,
now,
Linda.
I would think that last night when President Bush was giving his State of the Union message that he would have gotten the message just exactly why the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was sitting behind him. But with President Bush, there was never a clue. Now, I believe he's the best promoter for the Democrats that the Republican Party has. I believe we're going to see another Clinton in the White House unless Senator Jim Webb decides to run. What do you think?
It's funny, you know, I talked to a number of people that said if Webb ran, I would definitely support him. I mean, I think that if people sort of got used to him, I don't know if he would still be so popular. There's no way he could run a presidential campaign. He's way too blunt-spoken. I think that Bush was the best ally the Democrats had during the campaign. There's no way that they would have won the majority if it wasn't for him. The entire election became a referendum on his leadership or lack thereof. I did think that it was a quite striking moment seeing Nancy Pelosi behind him, both as a Democrat and as a woman. I think it was a pretty historic, and I think it was pretty much the only inspiring part of the president's speech.
Yeah. You know, I want to get your take. I talked with a guest in the last hour who thought that a lot of, at least the domestic policy proposals that the president made last night was indeed making overtures to Democrats on key issues and changing his tone. And he almost sounded like a Democratic candidate when it came to some of the domestic issues.
Yeah, I mean, definitely on the environment. I mean, he's getting there, you know, 6 years too late and somewhat belatedly and in a haphazard fashion. I think there's a lot of people who want him to do a lot more. On immigration, I mean, the Democrats do sort of agree with him on large parts of the proposal. I'm not sure they're going to do anything about it, though, just because it's such an explosive issue. And, you know, the health care plan is still being worked out. I quite frankly don't really understand his health care plan, and I don't think a lot of the Democrats understand it yet, and they remain skeptical. I mean, President Bush over the years has, in his State of the Union addresses, pitched a lot of domestic initiatives, none of which have really went anywhere because they all get overshadowed by Iraq. And it's going to be very difficult to work with this Congress in a bipartisan way when the first thing you do is blatantly ignore their advice on the war.
Yeah. Next, thanks, Linda. Christopher in East Troy is with us now. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, good morning, Joy, and to your guest. The drivel coming out of this thin-lipped bubble boy was astounding. I imagine the emperor with no clothes. But I did listen to one thing that was interesting when I think he said that they needed to do something to turn the war towards victory, which I took as he was admitting to it was going towards defeat and losing, and he said we need to turn to victory.
In fact, I have that clip. Hold on, Christopher.
This is not the fight we entered in Iraq, but it is the fight we're in. Every one of us wishes this war were over and won. Yet it would not be like us to leave our promises unkept, our friends abandoned, and our own security at risk. Ladies and gentlemen, on this day, at this hour, it is still within our power to shape the outcome of this battle. Let us find our resolve and turn events toward victory.
Ari Berman?
Well, it's interesting. President Bush repeatedly said we were winning in Iraq during the campaign. After the campaign, he said, well, I agree with my generals. We're not winning. We're not losing. Basically a stalemate. And now, by saying this is not the war we entered, he's sort of nodding to some of the concerns in Congress. But this idea that the war has changed from a war between the U.S. and Saddam into basically a civil war is, I think, what's underscoring quite a bit of opposition amongst people in Congress, particularly Republicans, who are sensitive to this notion of getting Americans stuck in a civil war. When you hear, for example, John Warner of Virginia, a very high-ranking Republican senator, who's leading this sort of alternative resolution against the president's plan, what Warner is saying is basically it's unconscionable to put American men and women, especially in some sort of escalation, into the midst of an Iraqi civil war. But that's something that the Iraqis are ultimately going to have to resolve, and we can't take sides and we can't resolve that. So I think that the move towards sectarian violence is, I think, in large part undercutting the president's support for the president's plan.
Thanks to Christopher. Wade in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I have two comments. Number one, Mr. Webb, the Democratic speaker, did mention something I think that's very important that everybody avoids, and that's the fact that the CEOs are taking 400 times what the average worker makes versus 20 times years in them. 20 or 30 years ago. And I think that's very important that we all need to focus on that. The other thing, Bush, when he alluded to whatever we voted for, people have short memories. I remember a lot of people running around that voted for him or advocates of him going over there and kicking butt. And it's just amazing how short people's memories are. You can go back 6 years ago when Colin Powell said, we go over there, we will own the country. And everybody said, so what? We're going to do it anyway. And that's my comment. I think we have to think about it, what we really have said in the past, and realize what we're saying now, and it's different.
Yeah, but Wade, thank you very much. It's a little difficult connection, so can't really hear every word you're saying there. But did you get most of that, Ari Berman?
Yeah, I did. The first thing about the economic portion of Webb's speech, it was striking. He did go in pretty great detail into the rising gap between rich and poor. I mean, this is a subject that the Democrats at times have downplayed pretty significantly. They want corporate contributions just like the Republicans want corporate contributions. And so a lot of times they blur the language on some of this inequality stuff. They talk with the middle class, but they don't really talk about the divide between the rich and the poor. Webb's not like that. This is a central issue that really animates him. He's not afraid to talk about it, and it was center in his speech. As far as the Iraq war, I mean, the administration's plan originally, at least some in the administration, was to go in, get rid of Saddam, put Ahmad Shalabi and some exiles in power, and shift to 30,000 troops by the first summer of the invasion. That didn't work, and there was a lot of people in Washington who claimed before the war that this was not going to be easy. Ironically, some of those people were people that ended up voting for the war in Congress.
Thank you, Wade. Rob in Sturgeon Bay is with us now. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make the comment that Jim Webb's speech was outstanding. I think everyone would agree with me on that. And one of the most important messages that I think he got across was that all Democrats need to stand up and be strong against the president's poorly run administration. And I think it gave great hope not only to myself and all Democrats, but I think a lot of Americans really felt it hit their backbone, and it gives everybody a lot of hope to see that change can come. And if everyone's as tough as Mr. Webb, I think we can get the job done.
Are you as hopeful, Ari Berman?
Well, I think Webb is a unique character. The Senate is not filled with 51 Jim Webbs, or 100 Jim Webbs for that matter. He has the experience and the sort of credentials to talk authoritatively about this stuff, and he's not necessarily that concerned with rubbing people the wrong way. That said, the choice of the Democratic leadership to name someone like Webb, who they knew was a bit unconventional, a bit of a maverick, to give their response shows that they want to come across as, you know, clear and direct, and that also that they're not downplaying the war in Iraq anymore. I mean, it's been sort of an endless battle within the party over, you know, how much they should emphasize, you know, the Iraq war. And now I think we've reached a point where they realize that this is going to be the defining issue, not just of Bush's presidency, but of their first 2 years in Congress. And the American people expect them to do something. How much they do is still being debated inside the Congress, but they definitely know they need to do something.
Rob, thank you. And Shirley in Madison now. Good morning.
Hi. This is a non-substantive question, in essence.
We like those, too.
Leonard Skinner was the man who was first named by President Reagan as a guest many decades ago for his rescue of an Air Florida person and touted for his wonderful civic duty. And last night, President Bush brought forth several. The part that I am astonished about was how many clap for themselves. Is this a common thing? Thank you. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you notice by watching the State of the Union speeches, there's a lot of clapping about everything. You know, President Bush says one word and people start clapping. And it was even worse when the Republicans were in the majority. Yeah, I mean, the guests are always a way to honor people. I mean, over the years, for example, you know, President Bush has brought, you know, different Iraqis there and different people. I was sort of surprised. I mean, out of nowhere, I saw Dikembe Mutombo up there, you know, the 7-foot basketball player. I'm thinking, what is he doing up there? This is really, really bizarre. So, you know, sometimes you just never know exactly who's going to be up there. Often they try to get some sort of political capital out of having people up there. They try to sell a policy by having them there. Yeah. President Bush didn't do that so much this year. His guests, I think, you know, it was nice that they were there, but it wasn't like he was trying to sell a war by having them there, for example.
Yeah, honoring the guy who saved that other guy on the subway. And
yeah, and that guy seemed really touched, and that was a nice moment of the speech.
I'm going to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
Ari Berman, contributing writer for The Nation. Stay with us. Coming up, we will welcome in John Leo after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
Madam Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress, distinguished guests, and fellow citizens, the rite of custom brings us together at a defining hour when decisions are hard and courage is needed.
President Bush, in his sixth State of the Union address last night, Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we continue talking about the foreign and domestic policy issues raised in last night's State of the Union address. And we'll continue to get your reactions and questions as we switch guests and get the take this half hour from John Leo. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. What did you think about what the president had to say last night and how the Democrats and Republicans, for that matter, are responding? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John Leo is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. He's a former syndicated columnist from U.S. News and World Report. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So did you like anything you heard last night from President Bush?
I thought it was a decent speech and well-produced, well-written. He didn't stumble. He didn't seem to congratulate himself when he pronounced the unusual words. So I thought it was a good job. The point is that with his polls at an all-time low and a Democratic Congress, it really doesn't make much difference. The overpowering sense that this presidency is really over was not affected by this speech.
Yeah. He did ask Congress to give his new Iraq policy a chance. Not much chance of that, is there?
I don't think so. Again, it was a well-written speech. The line, "You didn't vote for failure," was a pretty strong line. Of course, it fudged the issue about whether we are contributing to failure or rescuing the United States by putting 20,000 more troops in. Again, I think in tone and style, the speech was a triumph. It's just that there was no room for him to maneuver. And to many conservatives, particularly, I think the idea that he only mentioned things now that might have saved the Republican Congress, such as earmarks. I mean, there was total radio silence from the Republicans and the White House on $18 billion of secret earmarks thrown into bills without anybody's knowledge. I don't see why Bush wait until 2 months after the key election to remind us of this.
The headline in our Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning says that President Bush changes tone. He makes overtures to Democrats on key issues. Is that your sense of it, too?
I think so. On the one hand, this has been a very partisan administration, you know, with Rove encouraging the Republicans to govern without the Democrats. On the other hand, remember, Bush came into office as a bipartisan president, promising to end the sniping between Republicans and Democrats. You might remember inviting Teddy Kennedy to a screening of a movie at the White House, one of his first acts. He has been an unusually civil president. People sort of overlooked that since there have been so many people who work for him who have not been civil. But Bush never attacks anybody unduly, personalizes motives. So that with that as a background, you know, he behaved again in a very civil way. He didn't whine or complain about Democrats or get combative or say history will prove me right, et cetera, et cetera. It was a decent performance anyway, and the tone was right.
Yeah, he had a warm welcome to Nancy Pelosi, but it was noted by some coverage that I noticed that he maybe wasn't so civil when he called it the Democrat Party.
Yeah, a lot of people picked that up. Apparently, the transcript says Democratic, so it could be a classic Bush stumble, or it could be a slight jibe.
Guess I didn't think
nobody really knows.
Yeah.
But that is one of the awful hallmarks of Republican partisan stuff. Yeah. Drop that tick off the end.
Well, what did he announce or unveil or one of his proposals, any of his proposals that you didn't really like all that much?
Well, I guess the rhetoric surrounding Iraq, you know, that the Armageddon-like rhetoric, I could have done without that. I do think it's a terrible conflict between us and the terrorists, but to up the ante with the apocalyptic rhetoric, I think is wrong. I think it's time to let General Petraeus and and the 20,000 additional troops see what they can do without the rhetorical overkill.
Yeah.
I guess that my predominant reaction is that the good things that he mentioned were woefully late. For instance, assimilation. He doesn't use the word assimilation very often for immigrants, and he did here. And that has been the key difference between Democrats and Republicans, that the Republican constituency on the whole says, in effect, we don't care how many what kind of people come to the United States as long as they're willing to be Americans if they assimilate. And the Democrats, this is a vast generalization, of course, care for separatism and multiculturalism and letting people keep their own heritage. So that the fact that he waits until 2 months after the key election to use the word assimilation and talk about a melting pot, traditional rhetoric about new Americans, is another example of the good things come very late. Also, talking about a balanced budget now seems very late in the game.
Let me get your reaction to this clip when he talked about immigration. I know some Republicans, including Republican U.S. Representative Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, not too happy to hear this.
To secure our border, we're doubling the size of the Border Patrol and funding new infrastructure and technology. Yet even with all these steps, we cannot fully secure the border unless we take pressure off the border. And that requires a temporary worker program. We should establish a legal and orderly path for foreign workers to enter our country to work on a temporary basis.
And John Leo, what did you think about what he had to say about immigration? Oops, sure, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think it's typical Bush rhetoric on immigration. It's quite clear that he is not terribly interested in securing the border. Everybody understood that he was not behind building a fence, and the Border Patrol has been kept under wraps by Bush. I think he is beholden to business interests that want a huge supply of cheap labor. And he basically is an open border person, not saying frankly what he wants. And I think that's a disastrous policy. I mean, a country that can't secure its own border and has hundreds of thousands of catch and release illegals coming in is not a grown up nation. And I think there are huge problems building that the 12 million illegals here may grow to 50 million or 60 million. That will convulse this country, and I think Bush has never really faced that problem.
Let's start taking some calls. Rhonda in Appleton, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Well, I did want to make a very brief comment about the fact that his speech may have been a bit better because he has a brand new speechwriter this time around. But aside from that, I've kind of been against I have definitely been against the Iraq war from the beginning, and it's rather difficult for me most of the times to watch the president when he's speaking, although I try to get through it because it's important to do. But I enjoyed this last night. I enjoyed Nancy Pelosi in the background, basically orchestrating the entire Democratic response, and I loved it. Just kind of a comment there. Thank you.
A comment from you, John Leo?
Well, I think that the Democrats played this very, very carefully. I didn't see the speech. I had to listen to an audio recording afterwards because I had to go out. But according to the New York Times, Pelosi was very animated, leaping to her feet to underline some things of agreement. And I think playing it very, very well, that there's no point in jumping up and down on Bush. He's never going to run again, but the Democrats are seeking an image of moderation and reasonableness, and I think she has done a lot to amplify that stance.
We're talking with John Leo, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, former syndicated columnist, a guest of ours on a fairly frequent basis. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him about last night's State of the Union address and the Democratic response. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, and we are getting your response to the State of the Union address last night, and we're getting John Leo's response as well. He's our guest for this half hour, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And our next caller is Kurt in Oshkosh. Hi, Kurt. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning, Joy and John. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Say, I'm very clearly in the minority here, but I do need to say I very much support President Bush. I think that one of the clearest ways that we can finish this thing in Iraq is to do a surge of troops, get in there, get the job done like we said we were going to do years ago when we first went over there, and get some Iraqis trained, get the transition to their control, and then get our boys home, you know? I really think that we do need to give President Bush a chance on that. I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
John Leo?
Well, I think Bush is right that the consequences of just leaving Iraq to a civil war would be far-reaching and very dangerous to this country. Now, I don't know exactly what his thinking is. It may well be that he realizes that we can't win this, but that we can quiet the situation and maximize the opportunity that Iraq will take over control of its own country, and that we can have some time to protect the people who will be slaughtered, the people who assisted us for the last few years. Unfortunately, the news from Iraq gets worse and worse. There's a story today, I don't know if it's in your local paper, but the Iraq parliament, nobody's showing up. There's no quorum because the legislators don't even show up, partly because they're worried about security, but partly because they're feckless and diffident and don't seem to care very much about the future of their country.
So, John Leo, the Congress is going to take up this resolution to support or oppose the escalation, the surge. What do you think of that effort?
Well, I guess I'm for it. I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, are not happy with it. It's just that if the choice is to leave right now or in 3 months or to make one last stab at a strategy built around using 20,000 more troops more adroitly, I guess I would reluctantly go ahead with that. I think the stakes are so high that that this one last roll of the dice is probably worth making.
Yeah. Do you think it's wise or not that Congress would actually go on record with a vote for or against a surge?
Well, I don't know. That's up to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. It makes it very awkward for Petraeus and the troops to operate if Congress has a formal resolution that they're putting themselves in harm's way for no point at all. I don't know. I don't know what Congress will do on this. I think they'll probably punt in the end and not have a formal declaration, but I may be wrong.
Next we go to Tom in New Berlin. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Joy. Mm-hmm. good morning, John.
Good morning.
Real quickly, I guess my biggest comment is, like the last caller, and I'm kind of surprised that I have to say this, but I believe we should get behind the president on this in troop surge. Unfortunately, when General Senchecki appeared before Congress back a couple years ago and purported to need or suggest we needed massive amounts of troops over there to complete the job and do it right, he was criticized for that. Now we find out, and I wasn't one of those, by the way, but many were, and now we find out that, yeah, we guess we should have had more troops and stuff like that, but we didn't. We painted ourselves in a corner a little bit over there. We have to have a military and a political strategy, and I'm not so sure that the president has really addressed that effectively yet. We had people like Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and so forth in there that, as far as in my opinion, had a very poor strategy in fighting the war and managing it and so forth and so on. But that's where we are. We can't just up and pull out and leave those people over there who have depended on us, whether that's a majority or a minority or whatever. We can't just pull out and leave them to their own devices.
Yeah.
We just can't do that. And right now, what we have to do is if it's a surge, but it's got to be adequate to what has to be done. We've got to go out of there and make a success, however that success will be, whether it's a democratic form of government or something that is similar to that, whatever. But we just cannot pull out. We just cannot stop this. And like I said, it has to be a political, a military result, a combination of those two. Troop numbers have to be adequate to the job. We can't protect
our
own border.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, Tom, but I want to give John Leo a chance to respond to your thoughts.
Well, I agree entirely with what Tom is saying. Mm-hmm. I think that he's making the case for not bugging out really quickly, and the same case I was trying to make. I don't know what we can accomplish, but at least we can make the departure softer, or even if imagination begins to rule, to make it likely that partition will be one of the options. I mean, this is not really a nation. Something dreamed up by British mapmakers, and a partition might actually work. I've read the arguments against it, but still, if mass slaughter is on the horizon, I don't see why the U.S. couldn't make some effort to make sure the oil revenue is shared, but that there are three different nations, not the makeshift one we have now.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about one of the domestic initiatives, the domestic issues that the president addressed last night, a number of proposals when it comes to energy policy.
For too long, our nation has been dependent on foreign oil. And this dependence leaves us more vulnerable to hostile regimes and to terrorists who could cause huge disruptions of oil shipments and raise the price of oil and do great harm to our economy. It's in our vital interest to diversify America's energy supply. The way forward is through technology.
And John Leo, he went on to say, let's do some more ethanol. Let's cut back on our gasoline consumption by, 10% or 20% in the next 10% or so in the next decade. What did you think about what he had to say about energy policy?
Well, I would put that on my list of things that make sense, but that are much too late in 6 years, after 6 years of the administration. The dependence on foreign oil has never really been a priority of the Bush administration. Yeah, I think a more candid way of phrasing that would be, are we as a nation willing to pay a dollar or $2 more per gallon for oil to end this dependence that is hurting us so much? I think that would have been a franker way to put it.
Let's go next to Joe in Maguanago. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joy. As a conservative, I guess there's a couple surprises. I disagree with President Bush on the energy policy. For one, with the acknowledging climate change, there's been a couple major reports out recently that puts grave doubt on that, so I think it needs more study. One was the UN, which has put a lot of pressure on us to sign the Kyoto Treaty, recently admitted that cow doo-doo creates more CO2 than all the world transportation put together. And then also the University of Chicago has been down at the South Pole in Antarctica for 20 years, and they've been saying all along that the ice shelf has been increasing dramatically down there. So that's a huge question that, you know,
The president didn't call for any mandatory caps or anything on emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, though, Joe. So what is it that you objected upon that he said last night?
I think that he said that we have to change climate change. And I think as man, that would be like spitting into the ocean, you know, our contribution to that.
Yeah. John Leo, what do you think?
Well, all I noticed was a very quirky and Delphic reference to, quote, the challenge of global climate change. I'm not sure what that means. Is it a challenge? Does he presumably he doesn't believe that the case has been made for climate change? I think it has, but I acknowledge, as your caller just said, that there are dissenters. There are serious scientists who do not believe this, but something should be done. And again, Bush has punted on this one and simply denied that anything has happened. And I think. He's fudging it in the speech here without really saying exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah, did he tell you enough about what he wants to do with health care reform, John Leo?
No, I thought that was a brisk once-over. And the bloggers are kicking that one around this morning as to whether it's a good idea or not. I thought it was a rather complicated issue in which he spent very little time and sailed by it. But again, this administration has not really spent a lot of time worrying about the health needs of the vast number of people who are not covered. And it's only because this administration seems spent and stuck and low in the polls that he's taking up issues that he should have taken up earlier.
Yeah. Well, in our final minute here, John Leo, I guess it sounds to me like you don't think a whole lot's going to happen as a result of this State of the Union address.
Oh, I think not. I think a lot of this is an attempt to buoy his team on for the last 2 years to get some traction with the public. And, of course, starting off with all the domestic thing, is the domestic issues, is a way of admitting that this administration is going to be judged almost entirely by what happens in Iraq. And it's a difficult time for him, and the speech, though well delivered, I think will have very little traction in Congress.
We appreciate your time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, George.
John Leo, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report, giving us his take on President Bush's State of the Union address last night. Thanks to him, and thanks to Ari Berman from The Nation for their time this hour. Thanks to Leo Duran for all of his production all morning long, including getting all these clips and all the Congress people that we're going to hear from in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.